Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Lori Wagner, a member of the club's LGBT forum and your chair for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, the Reverend Dr. Kapia Kioma. Reverend Dr. Kapia Kioma is a program director at the progressive think tank Public Eye and, in addition, works with the Episcopalian Diocese of Boston. He's the author of the paper Globalizing the Culture Wars and worked underground in Africa obtaining the details of the funding of churches by American evangelists. Reacting to the misinterpretation of LGBT people by these evangelists, at his own risk, he became a witness to their spread of homophobia and the voice of opposition to the injustice it brought. He has continued to advocate for a rational discussion of justice for LGBT people through the lens of traditional African values and the impeccable accuracy of his work. His passion for social justice includes environmental issues, and his doctorate was in environmental ethics. There aren't words sufficient to thank him for his advocacy on the behalf of the LGBT community, and I would like to welcome him now. He wants to talk here.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for your invitation, and it's a great honor for me to be here. More so to run away from the heat of Boston. Boston is burning, so it has been kind of you to rescue me from that. As you are told, my name is Kapia Kioma, and I'm originally from Zambia. I came to Boston to study at Boston University and ended up working with the Political Research Associates in Massachusetts, which is a progressive think tank. And as a matter of self-disclosure, I have always told people that I'm an evangelical myself, having been trained in what I call the excellent evangelical schools both in Zambia and the UK. And then I came to Boston University. So in terms of my understanding of the evangelical faith, I am one of them. But I also disagree with what I came to learn in America about what evangelicalism is all about. I discovered that our values as African evangelicals and their values are totally different. I could not understand why an African evangelical would say, don't help the poor, why an African evangelical would be even opposed to addressing global warming, and advocating for guns, and you're a Christian with Jesus to defend you. An African won't understand that. So those differences forced me to start questioning more about the evangelical faith and also informed me of the need to do more research as to the similarities between these two groups. When Political Research Associates asked me to do this study, our concern was to find out the relationship between American conservatives and African churches, and how the Africans were being used to come back to America and make statements which no American was willing to make, to call human beings all sorts of names. But they were being given the audience by American conservatives to say those words. So when they go back, you tell them, why did you allow somebody to call a human being an animal? Then they will say, well, it's an African who has been saying those words. But why did you allow him to start with? So those kind of things is what we're interested in finding out, what's the relationship between the two. But when we went to Africa, we also discovered that it's not just the Africans coming to America and influencing American religious politics, but Americans are also going back to Africa and doing the same. But unfortunately, we discovered that whilst in Africa, in America, sorry, we have the police and the law to protect the LGBTI community. In Africa, those protections are not there. So when you incite violence against a certain person, people are attacked and no one is there to protect them. So you have an American who is looked at as representing the truth to Africans, going to Africa and saying certain things about a group of people, and then comes back, but Africans would take that as the truth and use it to persecute other people. And that led me to attend the infamous anti-gay seminar in Uganda, where we have the American speakers there. Notable was the famous Scott Lively. People in California know about him more than people in Massachusetts. He was there, and then we had Kareb and Exodus International. We had Don Smear also presenting at that conference. I was in attendance there too. So what I'm going to present today is out of my investigation and what I learned through this process. The starting point of my presentation is to alert you to the fact that the American culture wars are not necessarily understood in Africa. I didn't know even myself about the differences between Democrats and the Republicans. And the moment I came here, I thought I belonged to the Republicans because I'm a Christian. Oh, yes, I thought so. We didn't know the difference between these two groups and what they stand for. To us, we see them as one being secular, the other one liberal. For us, we understand. And I also didn't understand the difference between the Christian right and evangelicals, as so-called, or what it means to be a Christian in an African term. But when I started studying these groups, I discovered a lot of differences and how these differences are not necessarily pronounced to us when the people come to Africa. For instance, if you go to Africa today and ask an African to tell you about an American liberal, they will tell you. But if you ask them to tell you what they know about the Christian right, they'll be quiet. They don't know anything. And the reason is that the missionaries who have gone, most of the missionaries who have gone to Africa, who have taught Africans, are people who with conservative ideologies. They are able to define a liberal, but they can't define themselves. And because the other group is overdefined and always defined in negative terms. For instance, an African will tell you that a liberal is a person who denies God. A liberal is a person who is out there to promote evil. That's how we understand what it means to be liberal. In fact, I have to share something which happened to me in South Africa last year. This year. I was invited at the University of Pretoria to teach a course on sexual minority. And I started by giving the students a list of questions. There were 10 questions. And I just used the American political dialogue going on today, or the dividing points between the progressives and the conservatives. And among the questions I raised were questions about gun laws, don't African Christians support this, question of helping the poor, and is capitalism the best ideology for the world, all sorts of things. And then I used two questions there I put in, abortion as well as homosexuality. Do you agree with homosexuality or not? There were 10 questions. The African Christians who are presented in that group, they only agreed with the conservatives on two questions, that is on abortion and on homosexuality. 8 other questions, they were opposed to it. Then I told them that if you answer this way, then you are a liberal in terms of American politics. They say, what are you talking about? And the reason is that Africans don't understand these differences that much. And when people go to Africa, they only use two questions, and that is the question of abortion and the question of homosexuality to define who the liberal is. They don't tell Africans that during the liberation struggle, the very people who are now claiming to be the brothers of Africans were the ones who are supporting the racist governments of those countries. They are not telling people that the people who are now calling Africans their brothers are the ones who called Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu as terrorists and who justified whatever would have happened to them. They don't talk about those, to which the progressive voice in America was highly, highly involved. That's one part of it. The second part is that when we have religious leaders going to Africa, they're not just going to Africa to present the gospel, as they call it. They are bringing their cultural assumptions and the language which were once used in America and then exported to Africa and used in a new environment. And as you know, language can mean one thing here and to mean something else somewhere else. So you can use a word in America and think I can go and use the same word in Africa, but the meaning will be different. Or I can use an African expression. In fact, it happened recently with the BP director when he made that comment about small people. You saw how people reacted in America. And when I was listening to it, what's wrong with it? It's how the context will interpret those words. Now, with the American Christian right, one of the things they have done very well is to redefine themselves to Africans. They don't talk about the differences, but they talk about what they see as destroying the family values for Africans. And these family values are understood in terms of the American cultural assumptions about what a family is. I was trained in a theological school to define a family as mother, father, and children. But I tell you, there's no African would agree to that definition of a family. For me, a family value means I have to value my cousin, my mother, my grandmother, sister, my brothers. If I buy a car, we buy it as a community. You know, that's the kind of family value I'm advocating for. So when you go to Africa and you say, I'm advocating for family values, Africans will be excited. Because to them they think you are saying that the kind of individualism which has come to Africa, which has made us to start thinking about ourselves as father, mother, and children, is destroying the African culture. So somebody who is advocating for family value, in fact, is encouraging us to honor our extended obligations. So Africans will be excited and say, this is the person we want. But in actual fact, what this guy is talking about has nothing to do with the African family value. That's one part. The second part is when you go to Africa and tell them people about the perceived international gay agenda. In fact, I learned about it whilst in Africa. I didn't know about it, although I lived in America for some time, that there is what you call the international gay agenda to take over the world. Right? Here is American Scott Livery going to Uganda and saying that to Africans that, you know what, they have taken over America. They have taken over the UN. They have taken over Europe. And now they are out to take over Africa. And why do they want to do this? It's because they want to destroy the family. And if they destroy the family, they are going to force your children into becoming homosexuals. And if you disagree with them, they will push you out of Uganda. I wish you should have done that here in America, you guys, but you haven't done it yet, to push those who don't agree on the question of LGBTI out of America. But you'll do it in Africa anyway. That's the kind of lie which is taught to people. They present them as as evil people. And it sounds crazy, but this is something I have on video. Presenting people as evil, as dangerous. And somebody even like Don Smear, for instance, even though he has said he was duped to the New York Times, I don't believe what he said. He started his speech by saying, I got involved in this work of coming out straight because one of my friends was threatened. His life was threatened by gays because he said he no longer wanted to be a gay. So you present a group of people as evil out to kill. And if Ugandans don't stop them, then what is happening to America? What happened in Brazil, which according to Scott Livery, 10 years ago, homosexuality was never heard in that country. Now is the capital city of homosexuality, and Christians are being pushed out of Brazil. Is going to happen to Ugandans. Those lies are taught to a group which look at America as the center of knowledge, And you might not agree with this. I've heard people have critiqued that, and I say, go ahead. But you don't know what it means to an African. When they see something from America, they think it is true because an American has said it. And I've even said that on top of that, any African who has lived in Africa knows that when an American evangelist says he wants to see a president of the country, they definitely have access because they carry the American flag. So you have a crazy person like Scott Livery going to meet with the parliamentarians of Uganda and giving 4 hours of their time, suspending every activity in the morning to give to this crazy guy to address people, the parliamentarians, about this international gay agenda. I was in Uganda. And after that meeting, we got information that there will be a bill coming out of Uganda. One parliamentarian, in fact, is on my video recording, saying to us, the government now feels that we need a new law in Uganda which will take into consideration the international gay agenda, as said by Dr. Livery. On the April 20th, that was in March, on March 15th, April 20th, the bill in Uganda, so-called the anti-homosexual bill, is born on the 20th of April. The first part of that bill had Scott Livery's talking points in it, which has been edited down. It's no longer there, but I have a copy of that. So I've heard people who say, no, Americans were not involved in what's happening in Uganda. And I say, were you there? No, because Pastor Warren, Rick Warren has said he was not. Well, he could have condemned the bill, but he didn't condemn the words he used in that country in 2008 when he said homosexuality is not a human rights issue. And he supported the Church of Uganda to boycott the Lambeth Conference of the Anglican Communion. So it's one thing to say, I condemn the bill, but you preached hatred when you were there already. I've received critiques from people, and I love it, because they have said to me that my report on globalizing the culture wars is an insult to Africans, simply because Africans are capable of thinking for themselves. Well, I'll take that seriously if it came from an African. So far, no African has disputed my report. But do you know what's disputed the report? Mark Tully of the Institute on Regional Democracy. Who else has disputed my report? David Virchow, another American conservative. Where are the Africans? If they feel insulted, wouldn't they have responded? Well, it took only days, in fact 2 days, for Martin Semper to respond to Pastor Warren's condemnation of the bill. If I tell you that personally I sent a copy and I'm in contact with Martin Semper, I sent a copy of this report to him personally, and he hasn't said anything, not even on his blog, against this report. But Americans keep on telling me that my report is an insult to Africans. What is an insult? For an American to respond on behalf of an African, or for an African to say, this is what is going on in my continent, and I'm only asking that we hold American conservatives accountable for preaching lies. Now, you know that Lou Engle went to Uganda. And despite the noise people made, he still went there. And people are thinking, why did he go? Well, the reason why he went there is because he has had dealings with Uganda through Julius Oyet and John Mulinde, who are part of this group which aims at transforming the world, the transformation movement, to make the world operate on Christian principles. Now, those Christian principles are those which are made in the USA, not elsewhere else. So they have this agenda of transforming the world. They have been working here in America. They have been holding conferences in America. They have been to Argentina. They have been to Latin, to other parts of the world. Now, it was time for them to be in Uganda. But when they go to Uganda, the topic they are talking about is not about the Bible. It's about a group of people, very vulnerable persons. As I have said, the problem I have with the question of LGBTI campaigns, personally, is not political. And I mean it is not political. To me, it's about the humanity of somebody being reduced. Whether it's the Quran or the Bible which is being used to reduce someone's humanity, to me, that is the point of concern. And that's why I stand up for the rights of LGBTI persons. Because they are human beings. To describe them as being recruited by American conservatives, sorry, progressives, which is what Africans believe today. You know, there's a myth that American gays have gone and European gays have gone to Africa. They have started recruiting young people into homosexuality. Such a lie has become the truth. Now you say, when did we do that? Remember in 1998, I think the New Republic magazine published something about the American gays trying to recruit in schools. And they took that and said, we have evidence that they are recruiting people. And now in Africa, it's clear that they are doing that. That's how Africans understand it now. You can laugh about it, but the president of Uganda has kept on saying, I have evidence that Americans are recruiting young people in Uganda. The president, the vice president of Zambia believes it. The president of Malawi believes it. The president of Zimbabwe and even Namibia, they believe that nonsense because the myth has been told over and over again by Christians, and people now accept as the gospel truth. Now, in the end, you have these poor souls. I have been to Nigeria, been to Zambia, Zimbabwe, and also Uganda and Kenya, and worked with LGBTI persons. If the progressives in America are trying to recruit gays in Africa, then they are bad recruiters. They don't know what they are doing. They are doing a pretty bad job. Because gays I've met in Africa are poor people, unemployed. They have no homes. They don't know where their meal is going to come from. How can such a person transform society? So they are using the lies in America where gays and lesbians have gained a bit of recognition and using that, transporting that to Africa where they don't even have any power. And at the end of the day, what happens is that when a community comes together, we see a lot of attack on LGBTI persons. I was in Uganda and I was having a meeting with a lesbian, very, very good lesbian. And I was also talking to her. She wanted to meet somebody outside the hotel we are meeting. And immediately when she went out, she was attacked and beaten up. And the police came and they arrested her. Rather than arresting the people who were abusing her, they arrested her because she was trying to destroy the cultures of Uganda. She was taken, picked up. But later on released after they got the money and everything she had on her. That's the kind of life they are living. And the reason is because Christians have gone there to mislead people about gays. That gays are out to destroy African families, which is not true. That gays are being funded and recruited in schools by American progressives, which is not even true. That gays are very powerful and that they have taken over the world. I wish that was the case. But, you know, I mean it. But, you know, those lies to Africans, they are the truth and they are being used to persecute people. And whatever people can say today about the bill in Uganda, I know my colleague, I've had discussions with him. Jeff Charlotte has done more to talk about the political aspect of this organization in terms of the C Street and the family. and I agree with his findings, just as it does with mine. But my concern is that in Africa, the biggest instrument is the church. If you control the church, then you control the political life of the nation. And American conservatives have control over those churches. And as you can tell even now, even though the government has pulled out and other, the people who are advocating for this bill in Uganda are still church leaders. Until we understand the influence of the church in Uganda and in Africa as a whole, we'll miss the point about the Ugandan bill. What we need as people who believe in the humanity of others, who believe that human dignity cannot be reduced because of sexual orientation or the way somebody is born, whether they are blind or not, we should stand up and hold Americans who are preaching hate in other countries accountable. To pray, as Scott Lively has continuously said, for the nuclear bomb against people, the LGBTI persons in Uganda, where we know that there are no instruments of protections against LGBTI persons, is preaching hate. To go to Uganda and speak as Lou Engo did, inciting violence against a group of people because of their sexual orientation, is preaching hate, is hate speech. And I believe that Americans have a responsibility, a moral responsibility, to all their fellow citizens who are exporting hate across the globe, not just Africa, but across the globe, and hold them accountable. And the fact that they say, we didn't mean it, and we leave them, and we believe what they say, to me is just misleading. It's hypocrisy. They know what they are doing. They keep on singing this song about the international gay agenda. And to come and say, as they have said recently, that, well, Africans are capable of doing that on their own. Which I say, yes, they are capable of doing that on their own. But don't mislead them. We have seen genocides where people have been misled and they have killed others because they were misled. It is in Rwanda where still some religious figures are being prosecuted for having preached hate. They are going through the international courts because of that. And I believe that American conservatives who have preached hate in Africa, who have enslaved the politicians in Africa, it is time for us to hold them accountable. And as gays and lesbians in Africa have continuously said, if anything happens to them, those people who have continuously gone to Africa should be held accountable. I know they want to hold them accountable, but I know you will hold them accountable. And that is your task. Thank you very much.
Thanks to the Reverend Dr. Kapia Kaiwoma for his comments here today. I'm Sandeep Roy. I'm an editor with New America Media, and I will be moderating today's question and answer period. But first, we'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Globalizing the Culture Wars with the Reverend Dr. Kaiwoma. Well, let's begin with the question and answer, we'll be collecting some of the questions that I can read. But let me start by asking you, you mentioned that the church is the biggest instrument in Africa. At one time, the faith community was, sort of the voice of conscience against, and when the government might have been more despotic or a military rule, a faith community could be the voice of conscience. What happens when both the faith community and the government sort of join hands on an issue like LGBT rights?
Oh, that's a trick question. Thank you very much for that question. In the 1960s, when most African countries got independent, one thing you saw is the marriage between the church and state. And that, in fact, led to the kind of dictatorial leadership we have had in Africa, in that the church lost its power to critique the new government they brought into being. most of the founders of the new nations were members of these churches, and pastors were involved in the liberation struggle. So for them to stand up and critique the very instrument they put in place, it was very hard for them. And it has continued to that. When the church and the state come together and they agree on the issue, they don't see beyond what other people are or the minorities are advocating for. This has happened in Rwanda, where the church and state came together and saw nothing wrong with persecuting the other group of people. This has happened in, it's happening in Zambia, where we had a situation at one moment where President Kaunda was seen as God sent, and people could not critique him. It happened in Zimbabwe for some time. When Mugabe came into power, the new government of Zimbabwe had some church leadership in its wings, and what happened was that we could not use the church to critique the dictatorial leadership of Mugabe for so long until we saw that the country was going zigzag. Up to now, the Zimbabwean church doesn't know how to handle Mugabe. So when the church and state come together on an issue, what we tend to see is the oppression of people at its best, because the conscience is gone and everyone thinks the church is even supporting what we are doing, therefore we are doing it right. And any criticism of that, you know, any criticism of what the church is doing or what the government is doing is called neocolonialism. You are being a puppet of the worst. In fact, it's one of the weaknesses we have in Africa today, that anyone who speaks against what the church and the state has agreed on is totally said, oh, you are speaking on behalf of Americans, or you're speaking on behalf of Europe, and therefore you're not representing Africa, because the church and the state has agreed. And that's why they say homosexuality in Africa is an African, is uncultural, is unbiblical, unchristian, and it's against our law. So you can see how the church and state come together in terms of making an argument there.
So is this sort of the new evangelical homophobia that is coming? Is that different from what used to be there in the colonial Christian homophobia?
Thank you. Colonial Christian homophobia, I think I should write that. I think it's time for me to address this question, because I've thought about addressing it, but I don't want to address it. Now it's time for me to do that. In Uganda, you have read about the African Matters and how that story has been misled, and many people use that as the example of the fact that Africans were opposed to homosexuality. That's not true. That's misreading history and trying to make history speak to the issue today. The reason why those people were killed was that before Christianity came, they were pages for the king, meaning they were getting involved in homosexual acts. When Christianity came, when missionaries came to Uganda, they taught them to stop doing that. So you are stopping something that is within the culture of the people. And every time you do that, the king or the people will respond against that. So the people were killed. They were killed because they converted to Christianity. And now they are saying they cannot get involved in homosexual acts. That's the reason why they were killed, by their king, for disobedience. It's not a Christian killing persons. It's not, you know, it is something that was within their culture of the Ugandans. Up to date, in the Mwanga, or the king among the Baganda people, where that story originates, refers to every male in their community as a husband. That's how they refer to the males. It's not wife or anything, but husbands. No, wives. All males in their country are wives of the king. So those pagers were part and parcel of the wives of the king. And if the king is coming, they lie down, which in fact in their culture is the role of a woman. But this time, whenever the king is coming, they have to prostrate themselves on the floor, because if the king is their husband and their wives. So to try and use the question of African Matters, as bad as it was for somebody to kill people, and as bad as it can be that some of them were young people who are being used, but in any case, somebody else can argue that, how do you define young? Because young for them meant when you are reached the age of puberty, you have been initiated, then you are an adult. But in case of forced sex, it was wrong. But in terms of their cultural background, that was something that happened in the palace of Uganda, and the Christian Church is the one which stopped that. Now, I know that 39 countries in Africa have laws against homosexuality. And most of those countries were once colonized by England. And I've laughed whenever I'm told about the English common law. I said, don't call it English common law. There's nothing common about it. Call it English colonial law. And it's that law. It reads the same in Zambia, Zimbabwe, Uganda, Nigeria. It will read the same. It's a crime to have carnal knowledge against nature. That's the phrase which is used. And it's the same phrase wherever you go if you are under the English colony. That's how it works. So it is not studied that there was colonial homophobia. The colonial homophobia came. In fact, it happened in India as well. And I love the Indians for throwing that law out. But we Africans are still holding on to it and calling it our law. It is not our law. We never had that in our books. It's a colonial law on which we are basing our persecution of sexual minorities in Africa.
Let's talk a bit about Uganda. Since we heard a lot about Uganda when the anti-homosexuality bill was being debated and the talk of the death penalty, what is the status of all that right now?
The bill in Uganda was expected to pass, I think, in the shortest period of time. That was their dream of the people who introduced it. What they were not ready for was the international uproar, and the progressive media played an important role here. And I have to cite Rachel Maddow here. Because when she used that the video which I took and called Richard Cohen to respond to it, and when Richard Cohen said, when I write the new book, I'm going to change that. When he proved that he had lied in that book, which the Ugandan parliament was using as a handbook of the truth against homosexuality, that helped many Africans and Ugandan parliamentarians to see that whatever was said to them in that four-hour meeting with Scott Lively was not true. The international community also went in and made a lot of noise about the bill. So we have seen a slowdown to the bill. We are hoping, and I've just been talking to the chairman of Sexual Minority Uganda today, that the bill won't be read in the current, won't be voted on during this year. And the reason is that the Ugandan parliament is supposed to be going on recess on October, and they have got so many issues they have to deal with, and I don't think they are ready for that. Now, if it is not voted on, according to the Constitution of Uganda, a private member's bill, as introduced by David Bahati, cannot be reintroduced in the new session of Parliament. It has to be either reintroduced afresh. So that's what we are hoping would happen to this bill. Because currently, even people like Martin Semper, who are being so vocal, and once a good friend of Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Baptist Church, is not as vocal as he used to be. So we are seeing a lot of silencing of the bill, and we are praying that it won't go through. Now, even if it has to go through, it might be a reduced version of what we have seen. And this is because most of the media houses kept on talking about the death penalty. And they might remove the death penalty if it has to pass through. Now, if you're asking for my opinion on that, I've said I don't think we need to talk about the death penalty. What Africa needs is decriminalization of homosexuality across the continent. And that's what the State Department should be talking about, not about the death penalty. Because people can be alive and yet dead. And we've seen that. I've seen gays and lesbians in Africa who are living on the margins of society, who have nothing to eat simply because of their sexual orientation. They can't be employed. They can't go to school because of their sexual orientation. So if we are going to continue talking about death penalty, we'll miss the point here. What we need is to say African governments must accept that gays and lesbians are human beings with human rights to be protected and defended.
So in that context, what do you think is where does the responsibility begin with Ugandans to rise up and teach Ugandans the truth and so that they can be self-directed?
Thank you. It's one of my recommendations, in fact, in the report. If you got the recommendations, one of the recommendations I've made, I've warned against the Western progressives going into Africa and making statements on this issue, because that just confirms the myth. We have Africans on the ground. We have Africans who can address this issue. And the responsibility is to empower them. Now, the problem we have with this, when Africans are trying to write, even the most progressive institutions do not pay attention to that. We don't tend to promote their voices as much. So we end up having Westerners speaking or using Africans, speaking on behalf of Africans. When Africans have told them something, then they put their name on it and it comes as a Westerner speaking. What we need is to change that, to allow Ugandans themselves to speak out. You know, there are very intelligent persons I've met, like Frank Mugisha, for instance, sexual minority of Uganda chairperson. I've met Val Kalande, currently she's in Washington speaking. Julius is another, Kagwa is another very intelligent person who are capable of speaking against this and then going back to Uganda and informing the Ugandan community. But the problem we have with that, if they come out as gays, their level of influence will be limited. Because most of them, they come out when they are young. They are doing their first degrees. So they only end on that because they won't have an opportunity to study beyond that. Now, if we had a gay person, for instance, with a PhD in Uganda, I tell you the narrative would have changed. Currently, we have benefited from Sylvia Tamare, who is a law professor at Makerere University in Uganda. But if we had 10 of the persons like that speaking out in Uganda, the narrative would have changed. So it is important for them to speak out, but at the same time, they are disempowered because they don't have the qualifications which the Western world looks at as credentials for what you say. And as a result, they are just being used as research tools. We use them for the information, and then we make books out of them, and they end there. So we need to empower them. We need to start looking at ways and means of empowering Ugandan LGBT activists to come to a standard where they can speak. And at times what they need is just to come for a course on writing, for instance. That might be helpful. Or public speaking, and other things like that. Those are the things we can do to help them.
Well, on those same lines, aside from the U.S. LGBTQ movement speaking truth about the U.S. religious right, are there specific messages and message carriers that would be especially effective and culturally appropriate? Other than you.
Yeah, I've said that the difference between the conservative wing of the church in America and the progressive wing of the church in America is how they look at people. The other one would send a check. The progressives are good at writing checks and putting them a post and it goes to Uganda. There's no face to it. The conservatives, on the other hand, they do it the other way around. They go with the check themselves and they have a face to it. I think, you know, most Africans are afraid of gays and lesbians simply because they have not met them. They are being misrepresented. I share this about my wife. She was very homophobic until she met my friends who are gays and lesbians. And then she said to me, you know what? The picture I had about gays is this or this, big, powerful and threatening persons. But every time I have visited us,
They are lovely human beings. And I said, now we can talk. Now she has become a friend of LGBTIs. And she's so compassionate about them. You know, the way the conservative media and the government has presented, African governments have presented LGBTI, is that of evil persons. Let's put their humanity in the forefront so that Africans can see that we're talking about human beings and not animals here. Not pigs, as Mugabe has called them, but human beings, lovely human beings with potential to love and to be loved. And I think that will change. So the message carriers for me, first is to have gays who go in Africa, not announcing that I'm gay, go there as a human being, because I don't come and I say, I'm heterosexual. I don't say that. I come as a human being and I say, I'm John and I come here, Kauma. Let's greet hands, shake hands, and then move on. You will know about my sexuality later on. You know, but to try and go there and say that, I think is misleading. What we need is to send people there, to people can have relationship. The other thing is the State Department has done a lot of work on this, the U.S. State Department on this, in terms of making their statements. But I think that it's important, and more important so, to have real human beings affecting other human beings in Africa. The good example I can give is what one of my colleagues, Dr. Elia, Eunice Elia, told me in Denver, that they had a group of gays who were working in Nigeria. This is the Islamic part of Nigeria. And they went there to build hospitals and clinics in that area, which has been neglected, and they did that work. So when American conservatives went to the very area and they started speaking evil against gays, the reverend turned out and said to the people, you know the person they are talking about? They are those people who built you the hospital. And the people said, no. This is not true. Those are loving people, but the people we are hearing about are evil. You know. So having people go there and do work among Africans as human beings, first and foremost, not as gays or heterosexuals, as human beings, I think that will make an impact more than sending the money or anything else.
Do you think, you know, why is the influence of the Christian right in this regard been so strong? I mean, there are other groups in religious circles here who do not subscribe to that view. Why don't they have that much currency there? Or is it just a matter of money?
Money is one, but it's not all. If you go to Uganda, every office I entered, I could see TBN. In the office of somebody being watched every day. The conservatives have invested, you know, with the end of the Cold War, you had a total infrastructure you didn't know what to do with. And what they did is to get that and use it now for their communication purposes. So the religious right has outlets, news outlets, all over Africa. Every country you go, you're going to find radio stations, you'll find TV stations broadcasting daily. As I'm speaking, there's a sermon maybe from Myers being seen in there. There's a sermon from Rick Warren or another big name evangelist being heard in Africa. When you are talking about the healthcare issues and that thing, you see Pat Robertson talking about it on 700 Club, watched across Africa. So there are other avenues of disseminating that. The other thing you have to realize that the Christian right currently is the one which is running most of the colleges or theological colleges in Africa. From my head, I can tell you, Uganda Christian University, for instance, is conservative. You talk about Negesti, now in African International University in Kenya, is conservative. You know, the biggest colleges are all conservative colleges because they are funding from Americans. And the books which are read, 90% of those books which are found in those libraries, you'll find they are written by American conservatives. They are censored. Only those which agree with their ideology will be found in their libraries, so-called evangelical authors. So if you write the alternative, it won't get into their library. But that's what African theologians or upcoming theologians or church leadership trained in Africa have to read day and night. So that's another avenue in which they have increased their influence among Africans. The other one is that, as I'm talking, most of us have heard about the Watoto the Watoto group, the Uganda Christian Uganda Children's Choir. That's a very good group. I love them. I love the kids. I might not like the pastor for his homophobia, but they have this thing of running charity in Africa, opposing charity at home but running it in Africa. And that has worked very well because the people see their works. But the people who grow up in those institutions, they become ideologically conservative because the trainers or the people working with them are conservative. So it's charity following the ideology. And so they have got a lot of orphanages, very excellent orphanages, being run in Africa. And that also is helping. They have schools. They have this program, Sponsor a Child. And most of the people who have gotten onto that are conservatives. Not progressives per se, but conservatives. So what they do, they keep on this correspondence with the child as they grow up. And you know what will happen, they visit them and other things like that. So those are some of the avenues they have used to cultivate that. Now for the conservatives, progressives are very good people. And I love them for one thing, because they don't want to be accused of anything. They are very clean. And that works very well for them. So because they are going to be called being imperialistic or neo-colonialists, they are so afraid to get involved. They're even afraid to give a check to somebody because they don't want to offend. So the other group is doing it. The other group doesn't do it. So progressive churches don't do that because they don't want to be seen to be imposing on Africa. That has given the conservatives as the only voice, influential voice, in African policies today.
You mentioned Jeff Charlotte's book, The Family, which talks about the fundamentalist group that has influenced so much of the legislation that's gone forth and whose President Museveni in Uganda was one of the sort of chosen people in the initial. And one of the things he talks about in his book is how the family pours millions into a student leadership program that is going to train the future leaders of Africa. And given what you're saying about the control the conservatives have on sort of the educational system and the theologians, the books people are reading in the library, it seems like it's going to be a huge, it seems the future seems actually more bleak because the younger people are just being indoctrinated in one school.
Yeah, that's very threatening for me. And that's why I'm not called an African. I wish I can be called something else. But I'm an African in and out. The money going to Africa from conservative circles, I didn't say this in my report, I've said this, that even federal funding, the United States government funds some programs in Africa with a conservative agenda. For instance, some of the money goes to Uganda Christian University, and it's headed by Stephen Noor, who is a well-known conservative with ties to the Institute on Religion and Democracy. But on their web, on that school, for you to go there, you go to be a Christian. Not just a Christian, but a Christian who believes in what they call the rule of life, rule of faith, everything. And you have to believe it and live it. So don't expect a Muslim to go there and say Jesus is Lord. So the Muslim, if you don't believe it, then you can't go or you can't work for them. The other thing is that homosexuality is a sin, and any homosexual, non-homosexual, who appear before the disciplinary committee, tells me that the school does not discriminate, but only if you are straight. If you are gay, you can't go there, but we don't discriminate. That's what he argues, that they are open. The U.S. government funds that schools. The money going to training young leadership, I think, is something we have to be concerned about. Even the theological colleges being formed there, they even have programs to bring students here. One of them is at Trinity School of Mission, which is an Episcopal, I don't know if you call it Episcopal school, but it's more of an Anglican school now. This school has about $1 million, which was donated recently, just to bring African students and teach them how to combat, not homosexuality this time, but Islam.
So you bring them to America. I wonder where it's good to learn about Islam than going back to Africa where they live, because they live with Muslims every day. But you bring them to America to train them in American way of understanding of Islam, and then send them back to Africa. And what do they do when they get there? These are the guys, because they have masters, they have PhDs, the ones are going to become the voice. But they are training. Their schools are being chosen by American conservatives. They don't bring you to America to start to the school of your choice. They bring you to start on at their own terms, in their own schools, with their own professors. So you have a group of leaders who are going to come to go back to Africa with one ideology, and that to me is very, very threatening. But that ideology will be formed by the Americans. And as for the family, I think one of the needs which an African would have is to get connected to America. You like it or not? Those who have visited Africa will agree with me on this point. We were colonized persons. To me, or to many Africans, what it means to be successful, the word we use in Zambia, the word which is used in Zimbabwe, the word which is used even in Uganda, is to become Muzungu. Now, Muzungu means, when I become successful, I've become a Muzungu. Now, to be Muzungu means to be white. I've become a white person. So, that in itself, to have a white figure coming to America, or myself being connected to a white person, gives me power. And more so, if I can be connected to the C-Street, or the family, it even gives me more power. The sad part about that is most of the persons who are shared with the C-Street in Africa are dictators, and that to me is worrying. For so long, we didn't hear anything about Museveni's way of doing things, being a dictator. Museveni to me is a dictator. But how many times did the Americans use him as the model for African leadership? How many times did he meet with the president of the U.S.? How many times? No, you start asking those questions. It's not only Museveni we're talking about here. It happened to Savimbi, a criminal in Africa, a war criminal in Africa, killing his own people. In American politics, he was celebrated. Remember, he had to dine with the White House at the time when he was bombing, killing his own people. He was their person in Africa. So the question is, where is their morality? If they stand for truth and for the right, maybe we should call them the Christian wrong, why should they continue associating with people who are criminals in Africa? Because there is something they also gain. And I don't believe that it's just about influencing for the sake of the kingdom. The oil in Uganda, knowing more about now about the politics in America, and our lobbyists work, I won't be surprised to hear one day that the oil which is in Uganda is behind some of the things we are seeing in Uganda, the politicians' involvement there. We knew about their involvement in Angola, for instance, because of the diamonds which were there. So there is something more they'll get from it, not just what we are seeing on the surface. And I hope one day we can find out why they are very, very much interested in those countries.
Fortunately, we've reached the point in our program where there's time for only one last question. So let me make it a simple one. Are there Christian denominations in Africa that are actually able to preach tolerance, and how much traction do they have? And in the same vein of what you were talking about, are countries that have a stronger democratic tradition, do these anti-LGBT kind of messages work less well or just as well in those countries?
Thank you. To be honest with that question, that I've already addressed it in my report. Please read my report. You can download it from our website, Public Eye, just Globalizing the Culture Wars. In countries where there are democratic structures, the anti-gay rhetoric does not work because people are quick to question, say we have more important issues to talk about here. They tried to use it in Zambia recently, where the vice president wanted to use it as an organizing tool for political gain. The Zambians said to him, "We need food on our table. We are not interested in that. Please answer our questions."
But in countries wherever we have had the law, the new law being introduced, are countries with dictatorial kind of governments. We have it in Nigeria, as you know. We have it in where the president is the king, cannot be questioned. We have it in Uganda, where Museveni is dictator. We have it in Rwanda, where, in fact, Kagame himself is also dictatorial, but presented to American public, partially because of his relationship with Pastor Rick Warren, as a good man. Do not be lied. He's a dictator, and he has some war crimes to answer to. And so there it worked. But when they tried again in Kenya, it did not work because of the civil society there. They are well, well organized, and they questioned that. And maybe it's time for us to continuously support the democratic kind of institutions and civil societies working to advance human rights across Africa. That, to me, is key. But I must also just say this in as a way of letting you know that my friends have done a research on Islamic states. And as you know, Muslims and Christians come together on the question of homosexuality. In Senegal, where one of my friends is doing their research, they discovered that, again, the same thing is happening. Islamic fundamentalists are using homophobia as an organizing tool. And interestingly, they are even quoting the Christian right as evidence of American involvement trying to change their way of life. So gays are being pressed in the same room with Americans, and that is not working well in African Islamic states. And that's why we need to be concerned here about what they say in public, because that can be used as truth by Islamic fundamentalists.
Thank you, Dr. Kaoma.
Our thanks to Reverend Dr. Kaoma, author of Globalizing the Culture Wars, for his comments here today. We also thank our audience here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 105th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.